The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So last week I gave a talk on vichara, the Pali word for sustaining attention. And sustaining attention is really important for mindfulness practice and for concentration practice. If you can't sustain attention, it means your attention is distracted easily, gets pulled off left and right, past and future, and you can't stay on track. And you can't stay on track to really see clearly or be present fully for what's going on. And a big part of meditation practice initially is overcoming the forces of distraction in the mind so that you can stay present, you can sustain your attention. And that's needed, as I said, both for mindfulness and concentration. So today I'd like to add to the discussion by mentioning that this quality of sustained attention is a particular factor of mind, a particular activity that the mind is capable of doing, that is one of five factors, activities of the mind, powers, capacities of the mind, that the Buddhist tradition says is very important to harness together, to awaken and work together in order to have sustained attention. So it isn't only the sustained capacity, but the combination of these five factors is what's kind of allows us to get beautifully engaged, beautifully connected, concentrated in the meditation practice. And part of meditation practice is harnessing these five and bring them together. They're most often associated with concentration practice, and concentration practice in Buddhism leads to what's called jhana, J-H-A-N-A, and sometimes that word jhana is translated as the English word absorption. So you have rapt absorption in your meditation subject. So you have something you're focusing on, like your breath, and you're so raptly absorbed and engaged in meditation so that you kind of, in a sense, kind of for practical purposes, nothing else really matters. You're not really aware of much anything else because you're just raptly engaged in the breath. And this kind of experience, a rapt absorbed attention, is called jhana. And so these five factors, the psychological factors that come into play, are called the five jhanic factors. So they're often associated with concentration practice, but they come into play with mindfulness practice as well. And they're important adjuncts and supports for it. And it's useful to know about them and to understand a little bit how they work, and then to have them, to be able to support them and encourage them. And in talking about these things, we're talking about how meditation is kind of the art and science of using attention. Attention is something we all have, but there's a kind of art and science, kind of particular techniques and approaches and understandings to how attention gets used in different ways, and an art because it's very personal, and you have to understand how your attention operates, and you have to understand how you can use your attention. So it's one thing to read a book or hear teachings about meditation, and it's another thing to put it into practice given the ecology or the ecosystem of your own mind. And it's probably best to consider that everybody's mind is different than everybody else's, sometimes. And sometimes it's good to think that everybody's the same. But if you think that everybody's different, that means that no teachings are going to be the right teachings for you, but rather how you discover what's right, appropriate for you, is through experimentation, through exploration, through discovery, through understanding how it works for you. And then you understand what the different options you have for using your attention. Attention can be used many, many different ways. So you think of attention as a tool, and that tool can be applied and used many ways. In the Buddhist tradition, we talk about two primary ways of attention can be used in meditation. One is mindfulness, where attention can be used to see more clearly what's happening in the present moment as the present moment unfolds through time. So you're really present here, and to understand, to discover, to see more deeply. The other approach is the concentration approach, where the interest is not so much to understand, but rather to calm the mind, to get the mind calmed and focused and absorbed in something in a way that's very satisfying and meaningful. But both those approaches require using attention. So sometimes we use attention to look more carefully. Sometimes we use attention not to look more carefully per se, but to get absorbed in the focus and attention we have. Sometimes we use attention a little bit differently than those two, and that is we take attention and make it really large, like try to get a panoramic view or a wide-angle lens view of what's going on. Because sometimes if you have a really wide lens for your experience, you really have a big, spacious awareness to hold whatever's going on, then it's a lot easier to be equanimous what's going on, because you're less likely to be caught by it. When we get kind of fixated, contracted around something, the mind gets claustrophobic. And it's very hard then to dislodge it, or understand it, or get some perspective. And part of the function of one of the things we can do with attention is to blow it up really big and have kind of like a bird's eye view or a wide angle, wide view perspective of something. And things that we were bothered by, or we see it in one way, we see it in a different way, or we see it in a more relaxed way. So I'm trying to say that attention is something you can use in different ways, and part of what meditation is there's many kinds of meditation depending on how you use your attention. And there's different things to do. So, regardless, there are these five different factors that come into play as people get involved deeply or connected deeply to the present moment, to being concentrated in meditation. And these five factors are kind of the two we talked about last week. So I'll give you the Pali words, the ancient Buddhist words, and I'll give you the English translation. So the first is vitakka, which is this initial kind of application of attention. It's initial turning the mind to focus on what you want to focus on. The second is vichara, sustained attention, sustained exploration of what you're focusing on. And the third is which is kind of the main one I want to talk about today, but I'll do all five. The third is the Pali word is a little bit kind of funny in English to hear it. But the Pali pronunciation is piti, piti, kind of like we say pity, but piti, and it means usually translated as joy. Some of you know the Indian word ananda, meaning joy. In Buddhist text, ananda and piti are more or less considered synonyms of each other. So joy. So one of the factors of getting absorbed in meditation, to get really connected and focused in meditation, is the arising of joy. The fourth factor is sukha. And sukha is usually translated into English as either happiness or ease. And so one of the things that begins happening as meditation, you get settled in meditation, you start feeling happy. And the happy is distinguished from joy. It's interesting to see the difference. And then the fifth factor is often translated into English as one-pointedness, but it could also mean unification, a gathering together of the mind. And these five factors get marshaled or organized or evoked as we're able to stay in the present moment. So perhaps you have had the experience of being caught up in something. It could be a good thing or something, you know, some nice project you're involved in, or it could be some distressing concern or something. And you've been churning away in concern for a long time, and after a while you feel like you are you're tired or weary or a little bit exhausted, or you've kind of spent kind of focusing on it, and there's no longer productive to keep focusing on that activity. And so you realize you need a break. And so you go and do something else. You go, you know, I don't know what you do, almost anything, take a break. You can go walk, have a cup of tea, take a shower, exercise, go for a walk on the beach. Do something different. And it gives you a different perspective, and you kind of forget what you were thinking about. And because you're not thinking about it anymore, your mind gets revived, gets refreshed, it gets rest. It kind of breaks up the ways in which you were kind of contracted or stuck around the problem you had. And then you can come back, after you kind of take your break and do your thing different, you can come back and you see your problem in fresh, or your situation in a fresh way. And perhaps seeing it freshly, you see the solution to the problem the way you didn't before. It can be something as simple as doing crossword puzzle, right? You've done it for a while and you just can't think of anything, can't figure it out. And then you go away and you come back and say, oh yeah, that's how you've solved that problem. So I think it's a pretty common phenomenon to do that. So meditation can function that way too, provided that we learn how to put aside what we're obsessing with, what we're caught up in. And, you know, maybe it's relatively easy in meditation to put aside some real-world thing that you're involved in the moment, but when we're psychologically obsessed and caught up with psychological issues, interpersonal issues, emotional issues, and it's very easy to kind of, for the mind to churn away and work and try to fix and understand and review and all that. And sometimes we bring to meditation the same kind of absorption as we do with our problems, whatever, as we continue in our daily life. And sometimes people even think that the purpose of meditation is to let your mind do whatever it wants to do and just kind of be present for it. And that's a little bit dangerous attitude, because sometimes the mind doing whatever it wants to do is not so healthy. And so simply sit here and just let things be sometimes doesn't work if letting things be means you're just winding yourself up more and more. So one of the functions of meditation is to take that break, is to step away from what you're normally obsessing with and caught up in order to get refreshed, so you can go back to your life and see it in fresh eyes. And so how to do that in a way that maybe, you know, what it requires is that you have to be willing, you sit down to meditate, to put aside what you're obsessing with, what you're thinking about, and ordinary concerns of life and things. There has to be some willingness to somehow disengage. Now, there are different ways of disengaging. Sometimes you just let go of it and say, I'm not going to think about that anymore. Another way of disengaging is to not be lost and caught up in the concern, but to step back, that's bird's eye view or something, and really consciously be aware that right now there's a person who's thinking about X, whatever it might be. Now I'm thinking about my problem at work. And you might even repeat that a few times to yourself. You know, say it out loud in your mind, silently in your mind. Here I am, I'm thinking about work. I'm thinking about work. I'm really thinking about work. And you could even sing it to yourself. I'm thinking about work. But, to really acknowledge it, because if you really step back and say it loudly in your mind, I'm thinking about, you can yell it even in your mind, I'm thinking about work. Chances are that you're not going to be so involved in those thinking anymore. It's like you step back and kind of a meta perspective. You're seeing what's happening as opposed to being what's happening. If you understand what I'm saying, because it can be with you, you can be so involved and wrapped up in your thoughts. And so that's another way to step out of what you're thinking and preoccupied with, is just kind of, just acknowledge it in a really all-out, full, complete, even a loud way, I'm thinking about work. And you can even say, you can even kind of repeat, if you have a sentence that you're saying, you know, some that represents what you're thinking about. Say you're thinking that you're a really lousy person. You know, boy am I lousy. Say it really loud to yourself. Sing it. Get a tune, good tune. I'm a really lousy person. I'm a really lousy person. Lousy, 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 lousy. You know. And after a while, you start thinking, you know, I don't know if this is completely true, or this is kind of absurd that I should have these thoughts, or you get a kind of a different perspective on it. It kind of breaks up the solidity of this thought that you have. This is, you know. So sometimes we have to resort to, you know, strong medicine if we're so caught up in what's going on. So sometimes to step back. But sometimes what we do to kind of step out of is to simply focus our attention fully on something else besides our concerns or our daily life or something. And that something else, for example, can be your breathing. And you bring your attention and you try to bring your full attention to the experience of breathing and try to stay there with the breath. And you know, initially it's not that easy because the mind wanders off. But you come back and you try to keep it there and keep it there. And as you keep the attention focused and concentrated on something like the breath, less of your psychological, psychic energy is being utilized to think about your problems, to think about other things and your distractions and your fantasies and all that. And that energy that you were using for thinking about all kinds of things is now available for something else. You're letting up. And you know, a lot of thinking is tiring. Many people are deeply weary. Not just kind of tired, you know, you think you can wake up even relatively refreshed from a sleep. But if you're really attentive, you can feel like your mind is weary from, you know, a few decades of, you know, churning away, sometimes with the same psychological issues and self-preoccupations that we might have. And more often, people can find this deep weariness when they go on retreat. You know, that, wow, I'm just always thinking, always involved with this kind of feelings and something. But as you start getting focused and getting concentrated, that energy that goes into those activities begins becoming freed up. And have you? I wonder if some of you had the experience of, you know, probably of somehow maybe, you know, holding something, maybe clenching your hand, maybe you're holding something really tight or carrying something really heavy and really required using your muscles a lot, and then you're really making an effort, and then you're able to release your hand or put down the object, and in the release, in the relaxing, all this nice feeling kind of moves through your hand or your arm, kind of a release, the release of the tension, a lightening, a flow of blood perhaps, of energy, and there's a kind of, you feel this, you know, very very pleasant, intense feeling of energy, of lightness, of openness that comes up in that, in the release of the tension that we were holding. So the same thing with the mind. When the mind begins to relax and let go of its preoccupations, a kind of psychological energy or inner energy begins to become released, which feels good, feels enlivening. And that enlivening, good feeling of energy is connected to this factor of joy that begins happening in meditation. Because as you're able to stay, get more and more connected to the object of your meditation, to the present moment, so much so that your psychological energy and your concern, your interest, flows into the object of meditation, rather than your interest being in what happened at work, what's going to happen tomorrow, some fantasy of what you want, some fantasy of what you don't like. You're not interested in anything else anymore, but your interest goes into the experience of meditation, into the present moment. As your interest and your focus comes here, it releases energy and releases joy. And it's quite a remarkable thing to experience joy welling up, a sense of well-being and delight that wells up in meditation that is not the product of the normal sources of joy we have in our daily life. I think it's probably fair to say that in daily life, joy or happiness also often comes from getting what we want, from getting something, in the world, something happens. In meditation, you close your eyes and you're staying with the breath, for example, and then for no good reason at all, this joy wells up. This delight and sense of well-being wells up. It just feels like just feels so good just to be alive, without content and happy. I kind of sometimes liken it. I guess I said this last week, but kind of liken it to petting a cat, and the cat begins to purr. So at some point, you start purring. Because you're involved and engaged, and there's I don't know what all goes on internally, psychologically and physically, but there's something about staying gathered together, unified, focused, where all our attention and interest is gathered together on one thing that is very enjoyable. And some of you, I hope, have had that in your life. You have some hobby or art or music or reading books or something that you do where the absorption into the reading it is pleasant. And you kind of, you kind of lose touch with time, you lose touch with what's going on around you a little bit because you're so, contently focused, absorbed. And some of that joy of the absorption doesn't come because of how wonderful the book is. Maybe the book is good, but comes from the absorption. So I give you kind of an example that maybe you'll think I'm strange now. Maybe you already think that. So that when I was in college, I really enjoyed taking exams. Because it wasn't like I was good at exams, but what I discovered early on in college was that I started feeling really good taking the exam. So I would study and study and study and study, study as much as I could. And then when I came to do the exam, those 2 hours or however long it was, I would get absorbed in the exam. Nothing else would exist for me. It was just that. And I'd forget my problems and my concerns. And it was just like just one thing and focusing completely as I could. And when I came out, when I would leave exams, I would feel empty and beautifully empty and cleansed. And I'd feel so much delight. And I'd come out I would just look around at the trees and the skies. I'd be like stoned. the only thing I took was an exam. I didn't know anything about this factor of joy that can arise from concentration, but that was a factor that was what was going on for me, was that I was so absorbed and connected that absorption, we have the English expression rapt attention. And rapt, kind of connected to rapture, kind of, And so, when we get fully involved in what we're doing in meditation, there also this rapt attention or this joy begins welling up. And sometimes it can be very mild, and sometimes it can be quite intense. And there's also kind of a feedback loop, biofeedback kind of thing, where you feel the sensations of joy arising in the and you feel that it's connected to the focus of attention you have. And so then you're encouraged, kind of like I have a cheerleader, to focus more. Rather than thinking about work, because work is not pleasant, your problem you had there. So, it was nice and very pleasant to be involved with the breath. So you go back to the breath. And you go back more fully, and you get, you know, it's even more interesting to be with the breath when there's all this joy that comes up at the same time. And then you get more involved, and then more joy, it gets stronger. And sometimes it can get quite intense. Sometimes people say amazing things about the intensity. One of the amazing things is some people say it's better than an orgasm. That, you know, and that says something about them or about the you know, it's because it's so intensely pleasant and it's so physical and beautiful. Sometimes it gets so intense that it gets to be too much for people, and the intensity is actually troubles some people because it can be all the strong energy that's there. So it's the joy of being raptly attentive, of gathering together all the different psychological forces we have, so they're all gathered together around the object of attention, as opposed to being scattered and preoccupied many different things. So now you see that the first two factors of the initial placing attention on something and then sustaining the attention are required, necessary parts of developing this strong, rapt attention that starts to give birth, bubble up, of this joy. The other factor that comes into play with meditation is happiness. And generally, sometimes they've said, I don't know exactly how this works, but sometimes it's said that the happiness and joy are there together, but the joy is so much more intense always than the happiness that you don't notice the happiness. And the difference is there between the joy and the happiness is that the joy is more like a thrill, a mental thrill and excitement around doing it. Whereas the happiness is much more calm and like more like contented and satisfied. And it tends to be more felt in the body as a smooth, relaxed feeling, happy feeling in the body. More settled. It's said to be more profound than the joy. The joy is more excited, the happiness is more relaxed and calm, tranquil. And so if it's true that they're coexisting, as meditation gets deeper, or deeper means more tranquil, then the joy, the excitement of the joy, calms down or falls away. And then you start seeing that underneath there is a deeper contentment, a peaceful happiness that's present. It feels quite good. And then the fifth factor of these five jhanic factors is one-pointedness, or the unification of mind. And that's kind of what I already referred to, where all the different psychological factors that we have, we're operating, are all operating in harmony for the same purpose at the same time. So, you know, we're often quite scattered in our mind. We have multiple interests at the same time, and it isn't just multiple interests, but we have remnants of what happened lingering in our body. You know, if you just, you know, in a near accident, just coming here in your car to IMC today, and you might still be a little jangly from the accident, or maybe you had an accident, and so you really feel kind of like you're not quite settled. Your stomach is still kind of in knots, and so you're coming here, or you had a fight with someone, and somehow the adrenaline of the fight still lingers for a while, or a certain, you know, you had a certain mood from earlier, or you have something you're looking forward to, and so you're a little bit fantasizing, thinking about what's going to happen. Your stomach is hungry. But your meditation practice is so important for you that you really want to be on the breath. And so all those things are competing for your attention at the same time, and your mind's jumping around. The unification of one-pointedness means that everything that you have, your intention, your emotions, your bodily sensations, your attention, your thoughts, all those things operate in harmony, all together, gathered together one-pointedly, on what you're trying to do in meditation, on the breath. And that takes a while, you know, for that one-pointedness, this gathering together to happen, this unification to happen. So those are kind of the five factors that come into play for meditation practice. And one way or the other, they come into play. For most people, in most meditation, they kind of just happen on their own. It's not like we have to do something intentionally to make them arise. But as people get involved and focus on meditation, then these factors begin come kicking into place. And at some point, people usually, after some years or some months of practice, some of these more pleasant experiences like joy or happiness in meditation begins to well up. This whole process is helped dramatically if you understand the principle that your meditation practice is not helped by thinking about your issues. And now it's not so easy to just necessarily stop thinking about your issues or your fantasies or your whatever, but you can at least understand that you're not served by thinking about those things in meditation. Because some people operate maybe subconsciously under the idea that there must be something really important in those thoughts of mine. I mean, you know, because I keep coming, trying to be with my breath, and my mind seems to think it's really important to do something else. Because some part of you believes that it's really important to solve your problems, to have those fantasies, to do whatever it is. So it's important to really establish for yourself in a clear way that in meditation that you're not served by wandering off in distracted thoughts or in thinking about your problems or reviewing the past or planning the future, whatever it might be. If you really understand that principle, then I think it'd be a little bit easier to be willing to let go of those things. If you don't understand that principle, then other principles are going to carry the day. The principles like, you know, if I think about this long enough, I'll solve my problems. A lot of people have that principle. Because, you know, how many times have you thought about it already? So to have that principle, and then put, you know, so you're willing, so more willing maybe to put things aside, and then really be there for the present moment experience, be there for your breathing, be there if you're doing loving kindness practice, be focused on it. So these five jhanic factors, and five factors of attention, of focus. So I hope that in reviewing these and talking about them, that this is something that will support you to relax into your meditation, not to strive or measure yourself or expect something to happen, but to relax and soften and enter into this world. You cannot get concentrated in the way that these five factors come into play unless you're relaxed, unless you're kind of at ease. So to be relaxed and ease, and then begin to gather your forces, gather yourself around the breath, gather yourself around the present moment, to gather. And one of the ways I think of the cultivation of concentration, of presence in meditation, that has been helpful for me, is that life often involves rhythm. And the rhythm of, you know, it's just like the rhythm of sleeping and waking up, the rhythm of eating, rhythm of working and resting. There's the rhythm of breathing in and breathing out. There's all these rhythms that go on. And, you know, part of life is to ride those rhythms and to go along with those rhythms. And so in the same way, there's a rhythm to the mind wandering off into distraction and then coming back to, if you're focusing on the breath, coming back to the breath. And it's natural for the mind to wander off. But you don't fight the rhythm. You don't fight what the mind's doing necessarily. One way you fight it is if you expect, I'm supposed to keep myself locked in to the present moment and not allow myself to drift off at all. But rather than that, appreciate that you will wander off. your contribution to the rhythm is to come back. And so you're relaxed. You know, you don't try to wander off. You don't. You try to stay alert and stay present. But if you wander off, just that's part of that's natural, of course. And your contribution is to come back. And so you go off and come back. And if you kind of do that rhythm and work that rhythm and try to, as best you can, to stay present and not disturbed by wandering off, but just come back, massaging your mind, that you'll find that you'll be able to, with time, stay in the present moment longer and longer. And the rhythm is going to move towards a longer period of time here and a shorter period of time away. And you just kind of ride that rhythm. And it's kind of like massaging the mind, softening, relaxing the mind, coming back, and trying to stay longer and longer here. And as you do that, perhaps you'll begin to identify some of these jhanic factors. In particular, I hope you begin starting to feel some of the sweetness of the joy and the happiness that can come from being present fully in this moment here. So we have a few minutes, maybe just 5 minutes, if you have any questions about what I said, if anything needs to be made clear, or anything that would help. So here, if you can...
So the question is the joy, about joy and happiness. A lot of us feel happy after a retreat. So I was wondering whether that joy is the same joy that you get out of meditation, or is, you know, or is different level or different types of joy?
Oh, there's many, many, many forms of joy and delight, well-being, happiness. And I think sometimes there can be the strong pity or rapt, the joy of rapt interest and attention sometimes lingers for a while and stays close at hand. You can feel it afterwards as a glow and a warmth and different things, and sometimes energy moving through your body. But, you know, there's other reasons for joy at the end of a retreat. There's also the joy of being cleared out. Feel like you're no longer caught by your concerns, and you feel kind of refreshed and delighted and open and, you know, just very beautifully open and present and grateful from the experience of, you know, the retreat experience. Sometimes people have deep insights on retreat, and the insights bring them joy. They feel like they've seen something new. Sometimes they're able to have let go of something that they've, some burden they've carried for a long time, and they feel so lightened by the dropping of that burden. Sometimes their mind is not so caught up, churning away. It just feels so good to have the mind finally free for a little while. Sometimes the joy is because people feel like they've been involved in something very meaningful. They feel this is one of the most meaningful things you can do, some people feel. Go on retreat and do this kind of deep spiritual work. Deep spiritual work, some people think, is much better than watching television or, you know, some forms of career advancement. And dating. There's many things that, you know, many things you can compare it to. I think, you know, certainly that's very, very meaningful for the whole world, for people to do this deep inner work that this path is about. So one more here for Abraham.
Last week you were also talking about attention to and exploration of what we were attending to. So it's one thing to have focused attention on the breath and to let the stories drop away. And then also what happens on retreat often is storms happen. And that feels like, although you try and stay on your breath, you're aware that something is really coming in. And you also attend to that, trying not to get swept away by it, but just noticing how that you're attending to whatever the issue that's coming up. Let's say something is strong in your life about that. How is that attention different? And one seems more like a jhana concentration, but the other one seems like you're concentrating on an issue, even though it's very personal.
I think if personal storms, issue, psychological issue comes up from your life, then I don't know if obsessed is the right word, but the way that we pay attention to personal psychological issues tends not to be calm and focused. It tends to be much more analytical, or much more with memories, and it tends to be much more complicated. And so we might be, that's not all we're thinking about, or involved in and focusing on, but it's not a relaxed, centered attention. We're involved, we're concerned, we're being pushed around, it's maybe closer to being obsessed than it is to being paying attention. So, I mean, this is where the art of attention comes into play. So, where is it useful to bring our attention? And sometimes it's useful and important to bring our attention to the storms, inner storms and feelings, emotions that come up. But then how do we bring our attention to it is part of the training. If we're paying attention in the way we usually pay attention to stuff, then it's not meditation. And perhaps meditation is not the time to try to solve the emotional storms, but to discover maybe the bird's eye view, they can step back. But sometimes what's really helpful is to do the best you can to ignore it. And come back to your breath and just appreciate that you're having a storm. Storm has arisen. And not get involved in it at all, because you're not capable of being present for it any other way than the old way, the usual way. And so you just ignore it and just keep focusing on your breath. And try to get focused and centered and concentrated, letting go of it. And then once you get concentrated and focused and relaxed, then later you can go back and revisit it and face it and look at it in a new way. It's kind of like, you have a problem and you go away and you come back and you see it anew. And so sometimes, it's actually very useful to ignore your problems in meditation. And that's what I think more often than not some people need to do. And then if you do that, if you start doing that a lot, and you go to your meditation teacher and say that's what you're doing, at some point they'll tell you, you should stop doing that. You should really take and face these things. So teachers are always, often listen to you and help you understand whether it's useful to go into these difficulties or turn away from them. Okay, so I hope that wasn't too technical for you tonight, and I hope you could follow all those lists of things. And the spirit in which I kind of wanted to share that with you is to try to share with you how much joy I get from meditation. It's such a wonderful, beautiful thing in my life to have this, and the joy that I feel in meditation, something that then spills over and kind of cleanses or delights or creates a really nice energy that carries with me through my day. And it's a beautiful thing to experience it. So I hope that the engagement in meditation is helpful for you this way. Thank you.